Well, I was an odd kid for a variety of reasons. None the least, the fact that I was sort of the only baby of my mother, who passed away when I was a baby, and so were two-year-old baby. Just about my head reached the top of the card table. Didn't allow me to look up, though. It was a little later, when I was maybe 4 or 5, my eyes got above the card table, and I could see what they were doing there in the family. They were sitting around playing bridge, Grandma and Grandpa versus either my Uncle Dud or Uncle Floyd or my dad, Jerry, or I don't know who it was, the Fitzroys from down the street or over there. And so I could look over on the card table. I did. And I watched them play. And so at an early age, I got interested in the card table and cards. And even to this day, we play a form of Ohel. And it's a wonderful game. 4 people play, and they try to just really screw the other guy. So you need to have competitive people to play. But there are lots of competitive people. And just get the juices going, and they're right on the sawhorse. So, so there we are, 4 or 5, and living in this little town in northern Ontario, sort of on the edge there, Muskoka. And our high school had less than 200 kids. I mean, our town was small, and there was maybe, in the grade 9 class, there might be 40 or 45. That'd be the whole entering. They call it first form when I went, and then they called it grade 9, and over here in the States, they call it freshman. But there was maybe 50 kids in that class, and one teacher. And then after that, it dwindled down quite a bit. So there was probably 200 kids in the school, and in which case 100 of them came in on the buses from all around Dwight and Dorset and down to Mary's Lake. And they came in from all over, the kids. And in the wintertime, when it snowed, and it did, and it snowed, the kids coming from Dorset, that was like an hour ride on the school bus one way. Quite a ways, and around the bends and stuff. So in the wintertime, of course, the kids from Dorset, they wouldn't make the school at all. And most of the kids on the buses never came in the winter, a lot of them. So the high school then was made up of 100 kids from town, or just on the outskirts of town where we live. And so, so the school was small, and the kids were few, and I was an odd kid for a variety of reasons. Those another story there. So one of the things I would do as the odd kid in a small school is when new kids would come in, because like in 1944, people understood the war was pretty much over. And so people started leaving the city, younger persons who had a little money, and moving to country areas and buying a little store and setting up shop. And that's what happened in my town. And so during my high school years, a lot of kids came in. New kids came, not a lot, but 2 1 year and 1 another year. So I became friends with them, and I would know them, and because I went with the old man down in the city a lot, Toronto, and I was familiar with the racetrack and the horse trainers and hockey players and sports guys and that sort of stuff. I was in the city a lot, so when these kids would move up to Huntsville and to start school, because their folks had bought the shoe store or the barber shop or one of them things. Is running some dress store or something. Then, those kids were arriving at Huntsville High School, brand new. They didn't know nobody, and it's a small school, and they discovered that real quick, because they had all come from big city schools. So, basically, I was going to mention, though, the Undertaker's son. Yeah. Now, the Undertaker in our town, which I don't know, you know, he wasn't part of my experience in up there. I don't know what his name was. He'd be Mr. Somebody, of course. And he lived up on the hill there in Centertown, as they used to call it then. And, yeah, he had a son, and I think the son, I can only remember a couple of things about this guy. He was like, I guess when I was 15, and he was 15, and, well, the Undertaker, the couple of doctors, I never saw them, I was never sick, and I don't remember their names anyway, and the couple of attorneys, I mean, professional class, whatever you'd call it, names they would have. The Undertaker would have been one of them, and he had a son, and the son went away to private school. He didn't go to our school. In fact, I never really saw the guy. He didn't come up much, but maybe the Undertaker and his wife were separated or what, I don't know. But the kid showed up one time, one summer, and I was out on my bike running around doing something, and I run into him, and I say, "Hey, what?" And he says, "Hey, what?" And I says, "Hey," and he says, "Hey." And turns out he's up with his dad here at the Undertaker store up on the hill there, and he is just new here. He didn't know nobody, and he was wondering who I was, and I was telling him who he was. And so I don't even know if this is the truth, frankly, but it's the way I remember it, so it must be true, but is that for some reason, this 16-year-old, 15-year-old kid had a little gasoline-powered automobile. It was a tiny, it wasn't very big, and he drove it on the sidewalk up there. I guess that's how I noticed him. It's probably, I was biking around up there because it was a hill and you could get up at the top and fire down just as fast as you could go without killing somebody. And I might have seen him driving on the sidewalk. I seem to recall that he took me for a drive around the block on the sidewalk because he wasn't allowed to drive on the road. But it was I don't know, maybe somebody out there listening could figure out if in 1940, 45 or 46, there were little automobiles, gasoline, I guess they were gasoline powered. I have no idea what made the thing run. All I can remember is that him and me are in it. And so, I'm reimagining this whole thing. I can't believe this is true, but I think it is. And then, now way down the hill from him, and down in what was known as the Hollow, were the railway tracks, of course. You're not down there. You're not going to have railway tracks run up the hill if you don't have to. So the railway tracks had come in the town and left town, going out the north end there, heading for North Bay and Hearst. They came up from Bracebridge and Gravenhurst, shooting right into town along the track there, and bingo, they're at the station. And and then people got on and people got off, and heading north, not a lot of people went north. People wouldn't go south, though, to Toronto, and they would. So, but anyway, the train went and stopped there for a bit, and then, of course, the freight trains never stopped there. They just roared right on through, especially at night. You can hear them, like I might be laying in my bed up there, my cot, you know, it could be like 8:30, dark at winter night, and I hear the train coming up the track, and it's making a long, long, horny noise, and it's heading north to the bay. I'd be laying in bed, and I'd hear the train whistle. I'd hear the click clack of the little arms that came down over the road. And I could see the reflection of the red blinking light. It's nighttime in the north, and the North Bay Limited is flying by the express train. No need to stop in my town. Everybody's gone to bed by 9 o'clock. And the train heads north, and it was close by, just down the hill from the Umbershaker guy. And him and me, his son that is, and me, don't know what his name was, because we don't know what his name was. Anyway, he's got this little car. And we drive around in it. And then I say, you know, well, let's get our bikes and let's bike around, you know what I'm saying? And he's, yeah, okay. And so we get our bikes and we're roaring up and down the hillsides of the streets, basically. But my town was a very hilly town. And so there was a big hill in the back there. So you're going up. Most of the town was on a hill. So anyway, yeah. So we were shooting down there. And then we get down near the main street, you know, just where the movie theater was there at that point. And just at the top of the hollow and just up the hill from the railway tracks and the train station. And the police car goes by. There was only one police car when I lived there, Sergeant Haynes. And he was the police. I didn't have much to do with Sergeant Haynes. Well, one time, I was drinking, I guess we were 14, 15 or so, and I was working at the boat livery, cleaning boat bottoms for 10 bucks a week. You know, they were renting out these things to tourists, and they had to have somebody wash off the bottoms and stuff. And so I went to high school with this guy, and his dad owned the thing. And so I got a job there cleaning out boat bottoms, stuff like that. But, well, it was a, you know, it was a 10 bucks a week. That was a lot of money for a kid. Any event, so the only reason I knew Sergeant Haynes was one time him and me, the kid and I, Blackburn his name was. Anyway, him and me are in the dad's office there. Charlie Blackburn. I wonder, long gone now. I bet his relatives still live there though. But Charlie was a good guy. He was fun. He was fun. And anyway, I was working there, and Charlie was out in the yard or something, and there were some beers around, so I just cracked one, and I got my 15, and I'm drinking this bottle of beer. But Charlie's father was on the city council, and the damn lifted. Sergeant Haynes doesn't come up in his plea car, but I don't see him because he's at the back of the building. And he walks right into the office there, and there I am holding this beer bottle. And so so Sergeant Haynes says, I want you to come and to speak to me at the police station soon. And so I says, immediately, are you going to tell my dad? Old Jerry Brad up there at the old White Rose service station, coach of the Huntsville Hawks hockey team. And he went, so there I am with the beer bottle and Sergeant Hayes, and so I know who he is, and I went up there, and he was okay. It was all right. It was no problem there. Accident. Yeah, accident that he showed up. But anyway, me and this kid are bicycling around, and his dad is the undertaker, and we're now bicycling along by Hunter's Bay there, and past the hotel. There's a hotel there right on the bay side of the highway. That fucking highway ran right through town. It went no bypass then. I don't know what highway it was. I'm not sure what ran north there. Hard to know now. But anyway, the highway ran right along there, and that's where we were biking along there by the hotel. And Sergeant Haynes drives by, and he drives down into the railway station area. So the kid and I, well, I can't remember his name. No, he wasn't a kid. You know, he was my age. We weren't kids. We were, I don't know what the hell we were. But anyway, we were, so we'd go down there. Well, what's happened down there is this. A hobo. So north, when the train left the R station, it had to cross the river. And it crossed the river on a trestle bridge, and then it got back on the other side and North Huntsville, and away it went. And so, but under the trestle, there was a little area down there, and some of the, the poor hobo guys and the, guys on down and out fellas, not malicious guys or nothing like that, just not as, they didn't have the kind of crazy people roaming the highways that they have now in this day and age. I mean, what happened here in California with Ronald Reagan was just criminal. I mean, this guy, he closed all the asylums, or the homes where the poor people, who could not function. The state was looking after those people, and Ronald Reagan here in California became the governor, and the first fucking thing he does, he opens up the door and lets them all out because he's going to save money. Well, I happen to be living in Brink Sur when that happened. And within like a month, suddenly the highway's littered with people. And guys sitting there, with a half a bottle of milk and spilling it on their broken pants. I mean, this kind of, and the Republican guys, they're all happy as hell because they're saving money. And they left the social services part over to the people, regular people in small towns. To this fucking day, man, small towns are still trying to deal with the homeless. And this is all the problem of the Republican and that particular Ronald Reagan guy, an actor. Can you believe that? Like an actor, they'd put an actor in charge of anything? I mean, the guy is acting. And so, whatever there. But in any event, though, the poor souls that lived under the trestle bridge in our town, they were not, I mean, perhaps they were crazy, but they weren't out mingling. And so, but they were there. Any event, so me and this kid are zooming down. He's the Undertaker's kid. And we're zooming down to the railway station there. And we're pulling up. And, some poor hobo bugger, poor guy, sad. He's got hit by the train. One of the trains shooting through, knocked him. And there's the guy laying there. But he didn't have no head. No, his head's over there. He's laying there, but this the train whacking him knocked his head off. I mean, he knocked his actual head off. And there it is, laying there on one ear, sort of tilted a wee bit. And he's got a scruffy beard and his long, scruffy hair. And he's just a poor guy, a sad case. No need to beat up on the poor bugger, but there he was, and there he was. And so, but the ambulance hadn't arrived yet. So Sergeant Haynes, in his uniform and in his wisdom, and the pastor, and the gang from the railway station, all those guys who worked there and so on, everybody's just standing around looking at this corpse, basically now, the headless corpse. But the ambulance is on its way. You can hear the siren, but it ain't got there yet. And so him and me are standing there also, and we're looking at it. And when the ambulance pulls up, and they open up the back, there's one of those old timey sort of paddywhacking ideas where they open up the back and threw all the miscreants in the back on payday. When they opened up the back, they bring out a bucket, a sort of wicker sort of dealy or something, and they're working away doing that and getting all their equipment, carrying thing and all that. And this kid I'm with, he goes over to the head, and he picks it up by one ear, and he drops it into the wicker basket that the ambulance guys have brought. Well, I don't know what I thought, but I looked at that guy and that kid and the head. And it's, I, I do not remember what happened next, but I do probably remember that I left them there in the parking lot after having dropped this head into a basket. I think I got on my bike and rode up the hill and went home and didn't tell nobody about that story. And I'm not sure I ever saw him again. But it was a wower. I'll have to say that. I had many adventures as a young guy with my pals. But this guy picking up the torso, the head, yikes, that was, you know, a little beyond the pale.